It is Thursday, September 30th, last day of September. We're almost to spooky season, October 1st tomorrow. What a weekend we have coming up of college football. This is probably the most intense show that I've ever done. I would say I've spent a lot of time. I spent maybe more time on an Ohio State team or an Ohio State game. But as far as time spent in one episode, I'm logged over 20 hours just to research, study, and watch film on these games this weekend. And it really all starts Friday night with Iowa at Maryland. So we're going to talk about all of them. I broke them all down. I'm giving you my opinion, my predictions. Obviously, this year, not too dissimilar from past years, but this year have absolutely been on fire. I mean, you talk about on point and predicting things correctly. Unbelievable how well my picks have went. And I'm not even trying to be conceited. It's just I'm sitting here like, wow, I'm on my shit right now. But really excited to talk about it because, like I said, this should be the best episode you all have ever heard when it comes to analytics and breaking down a weekend of college football from me. Probably from anyone, but from me, I can speak to that. So we're going to get to that as soon as we get to the show. Going to talk about also tailgate coming up. If you're in town, even if you're not going to the game for the Maryland game, October 9th, next Saturday, come on down and hang out with Braxton Miller, myself, some other former players. Going to have a good time. I mean, it's a great setup, great food, Shade on the Canal wings, and I could go through it all, but I don't want to waste the whole show. Unbelievable food options, all-you-can-eat buffet, great drinks with peanut butter whiskey from Screwball, Buckeye Vodka, Corona beer options, some Bud Light, and obviously we're going to have White Claw. We do a little Buckeye drink, which is like a berry White Claw with a peanut butter shot of whiskey from Screwball, which is ridiculous. So come hang out with us, man. Check it out. It's on my social media, Braxton's social media. Links to the tailgate are on Eventbrite. It's going to be a bomb time. We're going to watch the whole game. Commentary from me, Braxton. Like I said, you know, you get the deal. If you're in town, it's well worth the bang for the buck. So check it out. Also, before we get to our one ad at the beginning of the show, I want to mention Minutes to Picks, our handicapping service. I don't know a handicapping service out there that offers there's three of the best handicappers in the world are on our team. And when it comes to football picks, you get my insight, right? Not only do you get the insight from this show that you can apply to your gambling habits or fun, but you also get an elite handicapping team. So check that out. Twitter, Instagram, at Menace to Picks, or patreon.com/Menace2Picks, and come gamble with us. But speaking of gambling, I want to tell you about one of our partners now, and the partnership started because I found out about him and I reached out to him. So this is not like just an ad read. It's something that I was really into and I want to share with you. It's called Prediction Strike. And I told you about it last episode, and I'm already on it, and it is badass. So essentially what you do is, it's like a sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of your favorite athletes, build a portfolio. You can build your own mutual fund based on athletic success, essentially. Some of these players that you can get right now, and so I'll tell you a couple guys I picked up. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is $2.32. per share of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So he is down from last year because he struggled a little bit. I think he's going to bounce back. That offense is going to get in sync. So I took him. Ja'Marr Chase, $7.80 a share. He's going to explode. He's going to have a great career. J.K. Dobbins, because of the injury. Now, this you won't see return on investment this year, but he's $5.20 a share. It's really cool, man. You go on, like last year, I think I talked about it. Jonathan Taylor was $2.15 a share in mid-November and ended the season at $6.15 a share. So that's 186% on your investment. It is cool as hell. You got to go check it out. It's really fun. I'm already having fun with it. I've only been doing it for 2 weeks now, and I told you about it last week. So get started today by downloading Prediction Strike's new app in the App Store or by visiting PredictionStrike.com. Sign up with my promo code Menace to receive a free share of an athlete when you deposit $20 or more. Just go to PredictionStrike.com and use code Menace and come play with us, man. It is a blast. There it is. Get the house cleaning out of the way. Check out Prediction Strike. It's really fun, man. And I'm just getting started. I wish I knew about this last year. I would have been all over it. So it's going to be fun. Go sign up. Use our promo code. Get a free share or whatever. Yeah, one share of a player. And just play mutual funds and stocks with NFL players. It's really cool. And come check us out at the tailgate, blah, blah, blah. You get the deal. We got a dumbass sports media personality of the week and about six games to talk about. So let's stop talking about it and let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio State. am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
Well, let's start off with a little dumbass sports media personality of the week. I'm sure you read about it. I'm sure you saw it. I just want to comment on it for no reason other than I fucking am so sick and tired of sports media personalities, especially the dumbasses and everyone. Shoot, myself included. I've been a dumbass before. It is not as much shit talking as it is identifying an absolute idiotic take. And Michael Wilbon of PTI went after Lane Kiffin, calling him a clown and all this other stuff. I don't know. I know there's no bad blood between the two. I think it's just clickbait verbiage that Michael Wilbon wanted to say, saying who wants to play for Lane Kiffin? That guy's a clown and all this shit. And his hot take was that was in reference to the fact that he was picking Alabama to win the game. And Lane Kiffin said it perfect. Like, what a fucking take you got, man. A 2-touchdown favorite, the number one team in the country at home. You're going to take them to win. And why he had to take shots at Lane Kiffin. Just a fucking clown show. And you know what it is? It's these Northwestern fucking sports media grads that feel like they can go off on these rants and tirades with no knowledge, no understanding, zero, any kind of basis behind what they're saying. Michael Wilbon wouldn't know a fucking football player from a basketball player if he was watching them on the field. It's just a joke that these guys can say this shit and people consume their content. Like, other than the fact that Michael Wilbon speaks well and studied being a broadcaster at Northwestern, what is his value? What is his value to everyone? Because he talks well, I guess he's kind of, it's entertainment. It's like going to the fucking circus and watching a clown. Right, it's like going to the zoo and watching a polar bear fucking swim in the water. It's like, oh yeah, it's entertaining. It's funny to watch. It's cool. It's like it doesn't provide you any value when it comes to sports. It's just joke after joke after joke, and that's what sports media, these mainstream sports media companies, are doing. They're just putting out fucking horse and pony shows in front of you to try to entertain you. This guy's a fucking clown. I didn't dislike him or know him, but I saw his comments and I'm like, who are you to call Lane Kiffin a clown when it comes to a college football game? Lane Kiffin is a successful coach. I know he's had his downfalls and his failures, but this guy's a fucking really good football coach. I don't know if you watch Ole Miss play, but holy shit, this guy's off. And we're going to get to it in a minute. This guy's offense is really fucking dynamic, better than almost any other one in the country. And Michael fucking Wilbon is going to go after him? Get the fuck out of here. Dumbass sports media personality of the week, Michael Wilbon's clown ass. So I wanted to get that out of the way. It chaps my ass, obviously. It gets me fired up. This guy is most of them are, right? You get former players that, and somebody commented on this. You get people with actual insight, right? Former players or coaches that maybe they don't present well, they're not as entertaining, they don't talk well, or they have filters, which clearly I don't. But, or you get somebody that's really well-spoken, really presents well, really great charisma on camera, but they don't have a fucking clue or anything else to bring to the table. For some reason, it's so hard to find both. And I think that's why when Peyton Manning does a Monday Night Football streamcast with Eli, like, people eat it up because the guy has personality, charisma, and knowledge, right? There's such a void in sports media of that. That's why Tony Romo jumped in a booth and people lost their shit. So hopefully I'm providing something similar to that. I also don't have a filter, so maybe that's a good thing. But anyways, I'm getting off my soapbox and let's talk about college football. Starting the weekend off the right way, Iowa -3.5 points at Maryland on Friday night. Tune in. It's going to be a great game. Maryland at home, a home dog on a Friday night. Can they strike again? That's the question. Here's my opinion. I've studied Iowa, studied Maryland, but I haven't studied them as in depth. I've watched studied film on them, but I haven't studied the analytics to go with it. And here's my opinion of Iowa. They're a complete front runner. complete front runner. They are a solid defense. More importantly, they're a solid defense with a bottom of the barrel offense. I think everyone knows that, right? They have two significant wins to start the year versus Indiana and Iowa State. As the season plays out, Indiana is not near as good as we thought. Iowa State was wildly overrated. But then they played Colorado State last weekend, and it was a little closer than you'd like, right? I think their run game was atrocious. Their defense was pretty good. Colorado State's not a barn burner on offense, though. But when you look at Iowa's defense, I mean, some things they're doing are just exceptional, regardless of opponent, right? They're number one yards per play in the Big Ten, 3.9 yards per play, which is third in the country. They lead the Big Ten with 6 interceptions. They have the second best rushing defense in the Big Ten, number 6 in the NCAA. So they're doing some things that are dominant, right? Most of what I just said was run game oriented. Now, they've given up some passes, but they're doing a good job of disrupting the pass game with interceptions, turnovers, that sort of thing. 36 missed tackles on the year is at 9 per game. So under their single digits missed tackles a game, fundamentally really well coached. I mean, it's typical Iowa, right? Well coached, fundamentally sound, tough. That's what they are, right? On the defensive side of the ball, that's what you're seeing. I will throw this out there about this game. They have not seen a quarterback like Tuilagi Tagovailoa. Say that 4 times fast. They haven't seen a kid like this kid. Tua's younger brother. The transfer from Alabama to Maryland. They also haven't seen an offensive coordinator like Mike Locksley. He is, I've said it before, one of the best in the country, if you ask me. But let's talk about this quarterback that Maryland has. 85% adjusted completion percentage. When you blitz him, it jumps to 90% adjusted completion percentage. The kid doesn't turn the ball over. 10 touchdowns to 1 interception. He's 63% on deep balls, adjusted completion percentage, 44% completion percentage over 10 yards, which is 62% adjusted. I just threw a lot of numbers at you. Here's what that all means. This fucking kid puts the ball where it needs to be, doesn't turn it over, and has ridiculous arm talent and is very, very skilled, right? The only issue Maryland has had throwing the ball is they've had some drop issues. I don't think Maryland will be able to consistently run the ball against this Iowa front, but Locksley is one of the best game planners in college football. Let's put it this way. Iowa State ran it decent on Iowa, 3.2 yards per carry. Nothing, not outstanding, but it wasn't 1 or 2 yards a carry. And Maryland hasn't been horrible running the ball. I think that Maryland has a decent chance to really make this Iowa defense look at least human, right? They're not the Avengers taking the field against this Maryland offense. I think Tagovailoa will be able to throw the ball on them. If they can catch the football, I think Maryland has a great shot to really win this battle when they have the ball. I really do after watching their film. You flip it to the other side of the ball. Iowa's offense, I mean, the entire issue with this team lies in their offense. Even if their defense comes back to a human level, they're still a really salty, solid defense. But their offense is awful. They typically have a solid running attack, decent play action, and a below average pass game. That is the resume of Iowa football. Kirk Ferentz's teams have a solid rushing attack, tough as shit, really good play action, tight end play, I mean, all of that. And then they can't really throw the ball, right? Against Iowa State, they ran the ball for 1.7 yards per carry. Colorado State, the same. So they haven't been able to run the ball against anyone halfway fucking decent. And Maryland has a solid rushing defense, 5th in the Big Ten. I think this will be the tipping point one way or another. If Maryland can stuff Iowa in the run game, they have a great shot of pulling this upset off at home. Maryland also has the second best pass defense when it comes to completion percentage and has only given up 2 passing touchdowns this year. And they've created 4 turnovers and interceptions. Similar to Iowa, they also average a single-digit missed tackles per game at 9.5. But the one thing Maryland does do, they get after the quarterback. I mean, big time. They lead the Big Ten in sacks with 16. They're 5th in the country. Iowa's awful on third down. Maryland's above average on defense on third down. This formula is simple. Iowa has a nasty rush defense and a solid pass defense. I think Maryland will be able to run the ball similar to Iowa State, maybe in that 3.5, 3.75, 3.8 yards per carry realm. And then this quarterback, Tagovailoa, is the difference maker. I think Maryland will be able to move the ball enough, and this Iowa offense is that bad that Maryland gets the upset at home as a Friday Night Lights home dog. That's my prediction. That's my opinion. I think Maryland pulls it off. Obviously, like last week, Graham Mertz fucked me, turned the ball over 5 times in like the 4th quarter. So They got to play sound. They got to play. They got to hold on to the ball. They got to do all the things anyone has to do to win the game. If they can hold on to the ball and not let Iowa get turn the ball, you know, create interceptions, which is not their MO on offense thus far. I think Maryland gets this win. I'm putting money on it. I'm counting it, banking it. Maryland money line, upset at home in whatever it's called, College Park, Maryland, in Terp Stadium with the Turtle. Another game that is on upset alert, the second game we're going to talk about, Boston College, Clemson. Jeff Hafley seeks his revenge, right, from the college football playoff loss 2 years ago. And when you look at this, I mean, I don't know that it's much of an upset if Boston College wins. I mean, on recruiting rankings it is, but not on film and football and X's and O's and all that. I mean, Boston College's offense is, I mean, it's proficient. I mean, 5.3 yards per carry in the run game. That's second in the ACC, fifth in ACC passing efficiency. So they're in the top half throwing the ball, top two running the ball. They're also number one in the AC and seventh in the country at scoring touchdowns in the red zone, which is so critical. And because Venables is ridiculous. Their defense, I mean, they bow up in the red zone. They have only given up a touchdown 25% of teams' trips into the red zone. So that's a strength versus strength. Boston College scores touchdowns once it gets in the red zone. They finish drives, right? They get it done. Clemson, even if they bleed a little, they don't die. They bow up when it counts, and they stop teams from scoring 6 points. Boston College is doing a great job on first and second down to get into manageable third downs. They're fifth in the country on third downs, 57%. And honestly, usually Venable's strength on defense has been third down defense because he brings all these bizarre and chaotic sub packages and blitzes, but they're very average on third down this year, 34%. This is not the typical Venable's defense. Now, they are a good defense, but they're not a dominant defense. They're really not. And Boston College is a fundamentally sound, methodical offense. Let's call it that. They move the ball well. They run the ball well. They're efficient throwing the ball, and they score when it counts. You look at offenses, that's what you're looking for, right? Can they establish the run game? Check mark. 5.3 yards per carry, second in the ACC. If they're not a dynamic throwing team, can they at least throw the ball efficiently? 65% completions. We'll take that. Can they win the money downs? Red zone, third down. Fifth in the country on third down, and number one in the ACC, seventh in the country scoring touchdowns in the red zone. Check mark. They check all the boxes on offense. They don't turn the ball over. This is a really, really well-coached, solid offense. And then when you flip to the other side of the ball, whoa, I don't know what. Life after Trevor Lawrence. Holy shit. I mean, right at this point, Clemson will take that girl that looks just like Trevor Lawrence to come play quarterback. That's how bad they miss Trevor Lawrence. Like, they'll take a lookalike. It's like a girl that breaks your heart. You go find the next girl that looks halfway like her just to kind of rebound. They need Trevor Lawrence's doppelganger, that girl from TikTok. Holy shit. This offense is, I mean, I don't know what they're doing. They're schematically, I don't know what they're doing. And you know what? There's been some NFL guys that have told me, even when Trevor Lawrence was there, like, Trevor Lawrence bailed them out a lot. And if you look back when they played Ohio State, Trevor Lawrence and beat Ohio State 2 years ago, I mean, it wasn't good scheme. It wasn't great play calls. They weren't getting open. Trevor Lawrence just made plays. He scrambled a shitload. He beat Ohio State single-handedly with his feet. So this offense has not been dynamic. Tony Elliott is, you know, it's like everything else. It's like some of these other coordinators that are just anointed, right? Tony Elliott, I mean, he got away with having the best quarterback in the country for 3 years. And, you know, some freaks, Travis Etienne and across the board, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, those guys. And now he doesn't have those horses, right? He doesn't have the run game with Travis Etienne. The O-line's average. I mean, they're 10th in the ACC in rushing, dead last in throwing it, 57%. Dead last in the ACC throwing the ball. This is Clemson. I mean, they used to have like everyone, right? They used to have Sammy Watkins and I mean, just freak shows on outside. Their quarterback play has been ridiculous, right? Taj Boyd, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, and now DJ Uiagalelei. I've talked about him a bunch. He's struggling a lot. I mean, they're average in the red zone, average on third down. All those boxes that we just checked for BC's offense, nah, they're not checking off for Dabo Sweeney and his vaunted Clemson Tiger offense. So I don't know how you call this an upset. I mean, DJ Uiagalelei struggled at every single throw you could have. Deep balls, over 10 yards, outside the hashes, all of them. Under pressure, his percentages drop. And Jeff Hafley, I mean, they've been They're solid across the board. I mean, they're solid in rush defense. They're decent on third down, 30% conversions. This defense, I mean, and we all saw Halfley's defense at Ohio State, right? You knew it was going to be extremely well coached, extremely schemed up. They were going to trigger fast, play hard. Everything Ohio State fans are crying about right now, that's what BC's doing on defense. So my prediction, once again, call it an upset if you want to, quote unquote upset. I think Boston College pulls this one out. I really think they do. Halfley, get the Halfley revenge tour is on full effect. So that's two upsets. I promise I'm not going all upsets in this prediction show, but that's my opinion of the game. I don't see how, unless Clemson has a rebirth on offense and some and their offensive line like grows up overnight, I don't see how Clemson's offense can keep them in this game. I mean, their defense will keep them in the game. I don't see how their offense wins it. I don't. Everyone's waiting for DJ Uiagalelei to kind of make that transition, that next step, but I don't know. I just don't see it happening right now in this football game. So anyways, taking BC any upset, want to throw that out there. So that's two upsets. You want to do a nice little upset parlay again? I don't know if I'm going to play this one because the likelihood that I'm going to hit two back-to-back two-team parlays on two with two upset picks is probably slim to none. But it's not a bad idea for you to play it because it's not my money. That's your money. anyways, speaking of gambling, if you want a place to throw that parlay in, we're going to get to MyBookie, a word from them, so they can so you can hear about the deals they got. Long time partner with the show. So if you could support them, we appreciate it. Quick word from MyBookie before we get to the Buckeyes versus Rutgers. The NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money, winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to mybookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs, highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week one, don't even sweat it, because entries are still open, and all it takes is one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't just take my word for it. Join now and start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at mybookie.ag and use our promo code Menace, M-E-N-A-C-E, to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code Menace. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, there you go. If you could support MyBookie, promo code Menace, hit it up, bet it up. Let's get some money moving, baby. So intentionally put those two ad reads front loaded in the episode because we still have four games to talk about. And I wanted to get those out of the way and ask you guys to support our show and support them for supporting our show to get to what we need to talk about. Let's start with this one. The Buckeyes go on the road to Greg Schiano and Rutgers. Now, this is not going to be a deep dive into analytics because I think I'm pretty deeply dove into the Buckeyes week in, week out. But I want to talk about a couple things. One thing is Ohio State's Nicholas Petit-Frere hasn't allowed a quarterback sack in 461 pass block snaps. I want to throw that out there. I saw it on Pro Football Focus, and that's fucking absurd. I mean, just absurd how well this kid is playing tackle. You partner that with DeJuan Jones on the right tackle. It's just, and then, I mean, Thayer Mumford's hurt right now. But when he was at right tackle, just the tackle play at Ohio State the last 2 years, 2.5 years, has been exceptional. And so shout out to NPF, because that's, I don't know that I've ever heard of that. Longest streak of any Big Ten offensive tackle. Wild. So let's talk about Rutgers. What is Rutgers? What is Greg Schiano? Rutgers, the best third down defense in the Big Ten, and OSU is the top offensive third down team. This is strength versus strength. This is a game I'm excited to watch. Right, there's a little bit of bad blood between Schiano and Ryan Day. Right, Ryan fired him when Ryan got the head coaching job. You know, they're both professionals, they're both grown men. I don't think there's any like disdain or hatred, but you know, there's a chip on your shoulder. Greg Schiano wants to walk in and shut down Ryan's offense and obviously pull an upset. But even if he can't pull an upset, he wants to shut down this fucking offense worse than anything you can imagine. And Ryan, I mean, he knows Greg's defense, he went against it at Ohio State day in, day out. And he knows Schiano. He's confident. If you want to call him cocky, you could. Arrogant. So this is a big, big matchup for two personalities in Ryan Day versus Greg Schiano. right? Rutgers is going to really challenge this offense, and Greg Schiano knows this scheme, right? He knows Ryan and what he does very well. He's pretty far removed from a lot of these players. Like, he knows Chris Olave, he knows the older guys, but he's not going to go out there and be like, I know Trevion Henderson's tendencies or how to break him down, because he wasn't here with him, right? But this is going to be really interesting to watch that battle, right? It's not going to be the storyline of the game. It's going to be a fun thing to watch, a fun thing to witness, right? The best third down defense in the country in Greg Schiano going against the best third down, or not in the country, in the Big Ten. The best third down offense in the Big Ten in Ryan Day, battling it out. Like, this is two heavyweights, albeit minus personnel, but schematically and personality and coaches. This is a big matchup. You flip it over to the other side of the ball, and I think there's a couple things that need addressed, right? One is, Zach Harrison is a top 25 graded pass rusher despite only having 7 quarterback pressures in the 3 games he's played. So this kid hasn't lived up to the Chase Young, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa hype, but he's a really solid pass rusher. He needs help disrupting the quarterback. See, what happens is when you have a great pass rush unit, right? What made Chase Young so good? It wasn't just that he was so good. It was that he had other guys disrupting the quarterback to make him move in the pocket, right? If a quarterback can simply drop back with zero disruption and deliver the ball, if you have one great pass rusher, they should be able to either game plan him or simply beat him with timing and getting the ball out of his hands, right? But when you have interior pressure or an exterior pressure on the other side where that guy has to step up a step just to stay protected, now all you've done is increase the time to throw, right? TTW. When the ball snapped and the defensive end starts a pass rush, what is the TTW? What is the time to throw? If the time to throw can be increased, your likelihood of a sack goes up. Zach Harrison needs help. He needs help getting that done. I'm not ready to say he's an elite pass rusher, but he's a damn good one. Getting Tyreek Smith back should help. A healthy D-line will be key, as well as some defensive innovation. I've talked about it all year, right? We need some sub packages, some blitzes to make sure guys have one-on-ones. And then when your best pass rusher doesn't have a one-on-one, other people need to get fucking home. And the emergence of Tyleek Williams, and my iPad autocorrects it to Tylenol every time, so I might just call him Tylenol Williams. Like, I don't know if he's preventing headaches or causing headaches. Tylenol Williams will be a huge, huge asset playing him more. The emergence of him coming along and being an interior pass rusher that is a big-ass freak like he is will be huge, along with Haskell Garrett inside. I mean, Tyleek right now is the 7th-ranked pass-rushing D-tackle in America, and he needs to play a fucking ton. Play him a ton. He's got to play a ton. And keep in mind, Haskell hasn't been that dominant this year. He saw flashes, but he was the 6th highest interior pass rusher a year ago. So there's no reason that this group Larry Johnson has isn't a dominant pass rush. And when you look at Rutgers offense, it always starts with the quarterback, Noah Vedral, however you say it. I watched the film on him. I think he's a good player. He's a good quarterback for Rutgers. 43% on deep balls, which is decent. 2 for 8 on deep balls to the right and 1 for 1 to the left. And it's too early to say if this is a fundamental issue or intentional by scheme, but keep an eye on deep balls to his left versus right, because not only has he launched 8 of them to the right and only 1 to the left, but he hit the 1 to the left and he's 25% to the right. Obviously, middle of the field, he's pretty good. He's really struggled on those. So here's what he launches the ball downfield. He's got some decent deep ball receivers, and they've made some plays on some deep balls. So his percentages are high there, but you get in those throws, that what I call NFL throws, right? 10 to 20 yards, those dig routes, those out routes, those routes that get you 12 yards in a pass play, right? He's 25% from 10 to 20 yards. Total, 36% over 10 yards. So below average when it comes to elite quarterback play. How about this, though? This is what's wild. 22 of his 113 passing attempts have been over 10 yards. So if you just look at stats, completion percentages, shit like that, this kid looks like he's a pretty solid-ass quarterback. But when only 19% of all your passes travel more than 10 yards, you are not doing much. You're throwing some quick game screens and shit like that. You're not beating teams throwing the ball. You're beating teams with, quick passes and exploiting zones, which is really, really smart by Greg Schiano on offense to scheme this that way, right? So the question is, if you want this game to be a game, Let Ohio State play their fucking soft ass one high zone and just leave holes and let this kid just throw under 10 yards all day and dink and dunk them down the field. Now, if Ohio State wants to play some contested coverages, let's play them. Play contested coverages. Contest those routes. Make him play quarterback and throw it down the field. They don't have a downfield. So Rutgers, I mean, going back to down the field, make him throw it down the field. Now, the one thing is Rutgers, they don't have a downfield drop in the pass game right now. They have not dropped a pass when it's thrown down the field. That comes back to fundamentals. And I'm telling you, as much as Buckeye fans might not like Greg Schiano, he is obsessed with minute fundamentals and developing them and coaching them daily. Like obsessed. Like OCD has an issue, might need medicated, obsessed. And it shows on film. The receivers have unbelievable hand placement, unbelievable eye control. They don't drop. They haven't dropped a downfield pass. I mean, that's. I don't know if there's. I should look it up. There might be no one in the country that hasn't dropped a downfield pass other than Rutgers. Now, what they also have. We'll see. Ohio State has the worst third down defense in the Big Ten. They need to tighten up. 47% conversions, 115th in America. Now, Rutgers doesn't have the dudes to run the ball in this defense. They really don't. They don't really have the skill to beat you throwing it downfield if it's mano-a-mano, right? Now, Ohio State doesn't believe in mano-a-mano a lot. We're seeing more of it. But so if they let this, like I said, if you let this kid just exploit zones, watch out. But here's what Rutgers is: a well-coached, well-schemed offense that is based on efficiency. Simple throws, high success rates. They have thrown zero interceptions this year. The best turnover margin in the Big Ten, 8 gained, 1 lost. This is a very highly functioning technique and fundamentals with well thought out scheme and play calling to increase the likelihood of success. That is Greg Schiano's mantra, right? High functioning technique and fundamentals, well thought out scheme and play calling, and increase the likelihood of success. He knows what he has on this team. They're not as talented as Michigan or Ohio State, but you watch the Michigan game. After they made some adjustments, they shut shit down. Michigan couldn't do anything. Ohio State will win this game. They will win big if CJ Stroud can hit open targets and this defense can simply match coverages, contest some shit. Ohio State's never going to become a suffocating defense, not this year, but if this offense is clicking and exploiting like they're capable of, and CJ Stroud is hitting, hopefully he was injured. Hopefully he's healthy now. Those missed throws high are going to start hitting strikes. All this defense needs to do is be disruptive, right? Disrupt quarterbacks, pick the ball off, like get after the, just be disruptive. You can give up some offense. You can give up some points. Be disruptive. Get the ball twice a game back to Ryan Day and CJ Stroud and Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. Get the ball back for them. Be disruptive on defense. Like run some wild shit, some Brent Venables shit, and just disrupt opponents' offenses. That's what they need to do. So Ohio State wins. I think Rutgers, this is not a game I'm betting on, because if CJ Stroud is missing and Ohio State doesn't play contested coverages, Rutgers will cover this game for sure. But Ohio State is capable. CJ Stroud's capable of hitting those throws, right? And the defense is certainly capable of playing man coverage and just locking shit down right now against this under-recruited Rutgers team, right? The lower talent Rutgers team. They're capable. So I'm not betting on this game. I'm taking Ohio State to win. This is not on upset alert. I got Ohio State to win. Those are my thoughts on that game. All right, let's get to probably the Midwest game of the week. Not probably, it is. Notre Dame, Cincinnati. Luke Fickell's going to South Bend, Indiana, looking to get what will probably end up being, whoever wins this game, let's put it this way, whoever wins this game, we can start talking about it, has a really solid inside track to making the college football playoff. Really solid. Because Notre Dame and Cincinnati both don't have, that neither of them has anything left on the schedule after this one. And Notre Dame feels a lot like the 2002 Buckeyes that won the national championship. Now, I'm not claiming they're going to win it, but they've played their first 4 games in similar fashion, right? Winning games close, and everyone's like, but they can't be that good, right? But I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. Cincinnati's coming off a bye week. Luke Fickell is, poised to win one of these big-time games. This team knows what is on the horizon if they can win this game. Cincinnati's going to win this fucking game now. You watch, the Bearcats are going to win this game. Now, Desmond Ridder came out now and said his coach told him it's going to be loud up there in South Bend and he needs to be ready for it. And his response was, it shouldn't be loud for too long. I like it. But if you're going to talk that shit, you better back it up, Desmond. Here's how I look at this game. Both defenses are very good. Cincinnati's defense is slightly below Georgia, Wisconsin, on par with Iowa. Like, best defenses I've watched so far, Georgia 1, Wisconsin 2, probably then Cincinnati, Iowa, on the Menace to Sports defensive rankings board that doesn't exist, but maybe I should create. Notre Dame is probably a tick below Cincinnati defensively. So let's look at when Notre Dame has the ball. They can't run the ball. I've talked about that all year so far. Offensive line is hot garbage. Kyren Williams has no room to run, and he's also just an above-average back that looked great behind the best offensive line in the country a year ago. That's what it was. 2.3 yards per carry, 128th nationally. They're just ahead of UL Monroe and Bowling Green. They're really pushing hard to catch Middle Tennessee. So they're really average at running the ball. Wisconsin, three yards. Not per carry. Total, 3 yards the whole fucking game against Wisconsin. The Cincinnati defense is not as good as Wisconsin, but they're not far off. They averaged 0.09 yards per carry. That means if they carried the ball 100 times, they would gain 9 yards. Think about that. I don't have a calculator or the wherewithal to do the math right now, but how many plays would they have to run if they ran it every play from the 25 to score a touchdown? What is that, 7,500 yards? 7,500 plays? Holy shit. Against Florida State, an average defense at best. At best, an average defense. Probably below average. They averaged 1.86 yards per carry. And then outside, so they're awful running the football. Outside of that, they're just about middle of the country throwing the ball by any analytic you want, right? Yards per game, completion percentage, all of it, right? Jack Cohn played lights out versus a bad Florida State team and played really well against Toledo. He didn't have the same efficiency against Purdue and Wisconsin. He had a 50% completion percentage versus those two teams. Overall, Jack Cohn hits 28% of his deep balls. Now, they fucking launch it down the field. He's thrown 25 deep balls. Most teams right now, it's like 8, 12, 10. Notre Dame's launched it 25 yards downfield. He's only hit 28% of them. He's 41% over 10 yards. And I want to talk about this one thing because this is the key stat to the game. The key to this football game is in this. The difference between being blitzed and being pressured, right? You hear me talk about both. There's a big difference. When a team blitzes you, or it could not be, when it's a base defense, if you do a good job in pass protection, a blitz is a benefit to the offense. If you pick it up, they're depleted in coverage, right? Just like if you pick up a four-man rush and have time to throw it, you can attack coverages. It's all about time. How much time do you have? So when Jack Cohn is blitzed, his completion percentage goes from 59% to 65% up. He's better against blitzes. But when he is pressured, when they're causing him to move, right? Causing him to navigate the pocket or scramble or make a quicker throw. He goes down from 67% completion percentage to 40. So the question is, can Cincinnati pressure Jack Cohn? If they blitz him and it's picked up, it's a big problem for Luke Fickell and his defense. Pressure will be huge. Not blitzes, pressure will be huge. Picked up blitzes will be the death of Cincinnati on defense. Luckily for Luke, though, Notre Dame has been absolutely atrocious at pass protection, at protecting Jack Cohn. Awful. The right side of their offensive line is, I don't know if there's something more severe than an Achilles heel, like the one thing that'll get your whole team killed. If there's something more severe, that's the right side of their offensive line. 22 pressures in this season so far, 5 sacks. Their right tackle, Josh Lugg, and right guard, Kane Madden, have struggled all year. And then former third stringer, the left tackle, Tosh Baker, isn't a whole lot better. Their offensive line is a weakness. You want to win the game? Hey, Luke, send this to him. Send this audio clip. Hey, Luke, it's your old buddy, Zach. You want to win this game? Blitz Jack Cohn as much as you can, but you better get home. You need to get home. Every time you watch this game and you see Cincinnati blitz, all you should be watching is, are they going to cause pressure? Or because if Notre Dame picks it up, watch out. Watch out. Now, I think they will get home. And if I were Luke, I would light that kid up like freaking the 4th of July. Every snap, I'd have a firework blitz coming at him. They can't run the ball. Notre Dame can't run it. I mean, you got to stop the run, but they can't run it. They're awful at it. So don't let them throw it effectively, right? Don't let them sit back and throw it. Throw every blitz you have at them. Here's the Menace to Sports analytic of the game. Cincinnati is second in the country in red zone defense. We talked about it back with Clemson. We were talking about, and I talk about it almost every game I break down. Second in the country in red zone defense. 5 touchdowns in 11 attempts. But here's the stat, the analytic of the show and of the game. Cincinnati has allowed 0 field goals. So 11 attempts in the red zone, 5 of them scored. The other 6 were no points. That's, I don't know that I've heard of it. That's insane. Because why? When you watch the film, they get really aggressive, right? They try to knock offenses out of the red zone and out of field goal range. It was a big Luke Fickell deal at Ohio State. When a team's on the 20-yard line, that is a 37-yard field goal. If you can somehow knock them back 10 yards, you're at 47-yard field goal. The percentage is just dropped in half that that kid's going to make it, right? They do a great job getting more aggressive and bowing up, right? They haven't blocked a field goal yet. They just get them out of field goal range or get them in disadvantageous situations. That is huge. Those field goals add up. 6, I mean, that's 18 points they did not give up that they could have if they just let them hit a chip shot on the 22-yard line. That's just the reality. Now you look at Cincinnati's defense, 9 missed tackles per game, solid. I mean, they're a well-coached defense, one of the better defenses in the country. So advantage Cincinnati when Notre Dame has the ball in a big way. Now you flip it over. Cincinnati on offense against Notre Dame's defense, who is a really solid defense. Desmond Ridder better back that shit talking up, especially coming off an Indiana game where he played pretty fucking average. Kind of an odd time to talk shit. I mean, he's 54% on deep balls, which is 12th in the country, 46% over 10 yards. His completion percentage goes from 70% down to 47% when he's under pressure. So pressure is an issue for him also. And most people it is, just to be clear. Those unique quarterbacks like Joe Burrow that thrive under pressure, those are the rare ones. That's when you're in the rare air, right? The question is, can Notre Dame get after his ass? Cincinnati's left tackle, John Williams, has been really below average in pass pro. He's responsible for 2 of the 3 sacks Cincinnati has allowed. So there, as a whole, this team is really solid in pass pro. Their one weakness is their left tackle, which is an unfortunate weakness position. But he's given up 2 of the 3 sacks, has a 16% pass pro grade. And, I mean, honestly, there's a matchup here that we're going to talk about in a minute. Alec Pierce and Michael Young Jr. are the 1-2 punch at wide receiver for Ridder. But the guy I want you to keep an eye on is true sophomore Tyler Scott. Potential big play guy, right? He's 7 of 8 targets, averaged 25 yards a catch, has 2 touchdowns. Now, granted, they were at Miami of Ohio and Murray State. He was only 2 for 17 versus Indiana, so it was against bad competition. But he's definitely a deep ball option, a big play threat. The biggest weakness on this Notre Dame defense is their linebacker core, by far. They're decent up front. Their secondary is actually really solid. Their linebacker core is just, I mean, it's their liability. J.D. Bertrand is a major liability in coverage. He's a major liability in a lot of ways. He's a major liability in coverage. 14 of 16 targets have been completed against him, and he leads the team with 7 missed tackles, more than double anyone else on the team. He is not a good athlete, not a good tackler, and what Urban used to talk about all the time, find a fish, right? Find your matchup nightmare. Go find a fish. Guess what? We found that motherfucker. Go after J.D. Bertrand all game long, however you can get him matched up in coverage. Now, that's what Cincinnati needs to do. What Notre Dame needs to do, the biggest key to them on defense will be one of the nation's best pass rushers in Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa versus the tackle we just talked about, John Williams. If they get that kid lined up on the left, normally you put your best pass rusher on the right tackle. Not in this game. Put his ass on the left tackle and let him go to work. Let him go to work. If he can get after the quarterback and disrupt Desmond Ridder, whole new ball game. The other thing about Desmond Ridder is they've had 6 drops. So he has a 76% adjusted completion percentage. Really high. They're not a big play action team. I don't understand why. Only 88 of his 746 yards have come on play action pass. Like, it's just really weird. They should be, as well as they run the ball, they should be better at play action. But he's a decent drop back quarterback, so they're getting the job done. This Notre Dame secondary is the one to watch because they're Jekyll and Hyde. And what I mean by that is Kyle Hamilton is probably the best safety in college football. He's an absolute freak show, great player. Stay away from him, game plan away from him, whatever you need to do. The cornerback Cam Hart had a monster fourth quarter against Wisconsin. He looks like a really good player, right? We'll see what he does against this team with a little better skill, but he looks like a solid option at corner. And on the other end of the spectrum, their other corner, Clarence Lewis, and safety Houston Griffith have been major liabilities. So you got two pretty elite ones and two pretty average ones. So it'll be interesting to see how that's attacked. This defense, though, well-coached, great fundamentals, 7 missed tackles per game. 2 of those missed tackles per game were from one guy, Bertrand. So the rest of the defense averages 5 missed tackles per game. That is elite-level tackling. The defense is a top 25 defense. That's what they are. They're not a top 10 defense. They're not a top 5 defense. They are a top 25 defense that if they had a top 25 offense, this team would be looked at as a real threat to make a run, right? The problem is they don't. Although it's not an upset as far as Vegas is concerned, it certainly would be a monumental win for Cincinnati and Luke Fickell with major college football playoff implications. Cincinnati wins this game under the shadow of the Golden Dome. Write it down, mark it down, take it to the bank. Cincinnati gets a big win, and now the conversation starts. Cincinnati, a non-Power 5 team in the playoffs. Could it be? Could it happen? God, I hope so. All right, moving on to SEC country. The last 2 games are SEC games of the week. We're already at, 45 and a half minutes? Christ, this is going to be over an hour easy. So I told you I got a lot to talk about, but a lot of good games. What? Shit, I'll do a 2-hour show if there's this many good games. Moving on to upset alert, Arkansas at Georgia, unless you look at Vegas. I don't know what the fuck that line is, but we're going to talk about why. The biggest question I have is who is going to play on offense for Georgia? JT Daniels now has a lat issue, didn't play, and will he be back? Kirby Smart said he looks good, and he looks like he probably will play. I don't know how much that'll hinder his throwing, but here's this Georgia offense. They are without Kyaris Jackson, their number one receiver last year. George Pickens, their number two receiver last year. Dominic Blaylock, who missed last year but was supposed to probably be their number one. They're also missing Arian Smith, who played early this year. So what they have on offense right now that are of note, Jermaine Burton is their single wide receiver that is, I think, a really good player. Brock Bowers has been a nice surprise at tight end. They're getting back Darnell Washington, their starting tight end from last year. So now they got 2 tight ends and a wideout and an okay run game, right? Washington was their starting tight end last year. Wonder if they go a little more 2 tight ends, both for the run game, play action, throw game, would be a nice injection into this offense. Bowers, the other tight end, is their leading receiver. He has 21 targets on the year, 18 catches. He leads the country as a tight end with 4 touchdowns receiving, the most of any tight end in the country. And then, Jermaine Burton has been really, really good. 12 for 12 on targets, 0 drops, 0 incompletions when JT Daniels, or anyone for that matter, throws it his way. 220 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he's been really good. I just don't know if they have the dogs, per se, to actually beat a solid defense. The run game, honestly, has been a little disappointing for me. Probably lack of throw game, right? They're getting schemed up a little bit. Zamir White is, I think, one of the best backs in the country. He hasn't looked great. James Cook, Dalvin Cook's brother, he's now playing for his 5th year thanks to COVID. So they got a nice little 1-2 punch there. And what they have to be able to do, though, they have to be able to protect the quarterback, right? Georgia's 2nd in Power 5 with allowing only 2 sacks. They're behind Michigan, by the way. So they got to keep protecting that quarterback. They can't let pressure become an issue. We flip it over to Arkansas's defense. This is really the Achilles heel in the game. As mediocre as Georgia's offense is, Arkansas also does not have a championship caliber defense. This is why this game's interesting to me. It's like weakness on weakness, strength on strength. They have a solid passing defense. It should match up well with Georgia throwing the ball. But teams have been able to grind the ball against them. Just the reality of it. Pro Football Focus has Arkansas's defense ranked the 13th best defense in the SEC. They have 46 missed tackles, over 10 per game. They have the 10th best rushing defense in the SEC. Teams have run the ball on them. 3.6 yards per carry. A&M last week averaged over 5 yards a carry. They have the 3rd passing defense, so they defend the pass pretty decently. 2nd red zone or 3rd down defense, 4th red zone defense. So situationally, this Arkansas defense is really good. They just can't stop the run very well. And Georgia, if they can do one thing decently, it's run the ball. So weaknesses and strengths match up. This is what to keep an eye on. What does Georgia do in the air? And can Arkansas step up and stop the run? Now you flip this over. Holy shit. Let me start with this. 15 missed tackles total on the year for Georgia. Arkansas almost has that every single game. This is the best defense in America, and they're getting back Tyke Smith. I guess getting back. He's coming back from injury. He was an All-American safety through the transfer portal to West Virginia. It's crazy how much work Kirby Smart got done in the transfer portal. Wouldn't you love to have that kid at Ohio State right now? Like, how the fuck did they not go after him? They also got Darian Kendrick. Buckeye fans probably know him. He was a two-year starter for Clemson. Really good player at corner, and he's playing really well for Georgia. So you look at what they have, right? Safety position, Tyke Smith, we just talked about him. He was an All-American last year. Great player. If he's healthy, will be an impact guy. Impact addition to already the best defense in the country. Christopher Smith and Lewis Kine have been really good, right? At corner, holy shit. Keely Ringo might be the best corner in the country. He's been thrown at 11 times, zero catches. He's dominant. He's dominant. Darian Kendrick, the two-year starter at Clemson, has only allowed three catches on eight targets. He's been really good. Their safety slash slot corner, Latavius Breeny, has allowed three catches for a total of 17 yards. The back seven for Georgia is long, athletic, dynamic. They play physical. They're fucking legit. Defense as a whole, I don't know. What more do you want? Number one in the country, allowing 3.3 yards per play. First scoring defense in the country, 5.8 points per game. Fifth rushing defense in the country, 2.3 yards per carry. Second pass defense in the country, no matter how you cut it, yards per game or completion percentage. They're 11th in the country with 14 sacks. They've gotten after the quarterback. Fifth best third down defense in Power 5 football. The number one red zone defense in the country. They have not allowed a red zone touchdown yet. They have only allowed teams into the red zone four times. Absolute filth. Filth. Now that's analytically. I get it. You know, that's... You gain perspective from film study. Like the offenses they face, right? Clemson, 121st in the country. UAB, 79th. South Carolina, 116th. Vanderbilt, 123rd. I get it. They haven't played an offense worth a broke dick at all. But when I cut that film on and watch those that defense fly around, the scheme that they use, right? How athletic they look. The intensity they play with, how they trigger. It's unlike anyone else in the country that I watch. Now, here's the thing about Arkansas. They run the shit out of the ball. That's what they do. They have 188 rushing attempts, the most in the SEC, fourth on average, 5.5 yards per pop. They're 11th throwing the ball efficiently, which you don't care about yards if you have a great run game. You need to see efficiency, right? If you have a great run game and you throw it efficiently, you're going to move the ball, score touchdowns, and score points. You don't need to throw for 400 yards a game if you're running the ball well. But 11th in the SEC throwing the ball efficiently, that's a problem. This KJ Jefferson is a good player, probably surprise of the year in the SEC thus far. He only completed 9 passes against Texas A&M. He's killing people with his legs, though. 7.2 yards per carry, the Razorback's second leading rusher. This kid is a dynamic dual threat guy that throws it okay. He's 62% on deep balls, which is, I mean, a menace to defenses everywhere. That's crazy. 59% over 10 yards, but he didn't play well against A&M. Probably the stiffest competition they've had. His lowest production is 0 to 10 yards, which is because of his footwork and release. He's raw. He's a dual threat. 56% from 0 to 10 yards. You'd like it to be higher. They're going to need some quick throws against this defense. Arkansas is exponentially improved, and KJ Jefferson is the surprise of the year. But I'm sorry. This defense is too good. KJ Jefferson isn't quite ready for this type of challenge. I think Georgia escapes this trap game and wins, but doesn't cover. I'm taking Arkansas plus 18.5 because that spread is fucking absurd. Sam Pittman plays this one close, and here's why. He's going to control the clock, keep it close, because this is not a must-win for Arkansas. You might think every game's a must-win. This one is not. If they can just keep this one close, win the West by beating Ole Miss and Bama, and then beat Georgia in the rematch in Atlanta, they're going to the playoffs. They want to win the SEC championship? This game has no bearing on winning the SEC championship. This game doesn't matter to Arkansas. Because if they beat Ole Miss and beat Alabama, they're going to Atlanta. They're playing Georgia again. They can avenge their loss. This game only matters for optics. So I think Sam Pittman plays this one close, tries to control the clock, and keeps this in a single-digit game. That's what I think they're going to need to do. And I think they do it. So I'm taking Arkansas plus 18.5. Book it. Now, the game of the week, the last one to talk about, the one that everyone wants to discuss. Can a former assistant coach of Nick Saban's beat the sensei? Can the Ninja Turtle beat the sensei? Can they do it? Can someone beat this son of a bitch ever? I mean, he's got, what, 5 head coaches out there that work for him? Can somebody knock him off, please? And if there's one I want it to be Lane Kiffin so bad, because he's the one that is like, not anti-Saban, but just the opposite of Saban. So when you look at this, Ole Miss's offense is stupid, ridiculous. I mean, dynamic, explosive. I love them. I love their offense. But they've only played three games. Louisville, who looks better than I expected, who's 3-1. They beat them by, what, 19 points. Austin Peay and Tulane. Now, their offense, number one in the country in scoring, number four in rushing. I mean, here's what they are. After studying their film, they do a lot of tempo. They RPO the shit out of people. Run pass options, right, where he can give it or throw it. And it's a fucking nightmare for Nick Saban. The two things that Nick Saban hates more than anything in this world, right, more than anything in this world, are tempo offenses and RPOs. You can hear him bitch about it in press conferences all over the place. How it's not safe for the players to go tempo. They don't have time to get set. They're tired. That's how people get hurt. And the RPOs are cheating. How is a defense supposed to play the run when it could be a run or a pass, right? When guys are downfield blocking and we're throwing it. Nick Saban hates this shit more than anything in the world. And I'll say this. Matt Corral, baller. Baller. Rushing threat, almost 5 yards per carry, 5 touchdowns. Just a freaking baller. 81% adjusted completion percentage when kept clean. 7-for-12 on deep balls. 8th best in the Power 5, by the way. 56% over 10 yards. Stud. Set. Now, here's the caveat. 751 of his 1,000 yards, 75% of his yards are on RPOs and play actions. So this is not, he's not a drop back passer. This is run game, quarterback run, RPOs, play action. That's what it is. And Nick Saban fucking despises it. Here's how good this offense has been. Out of the 100 throws that Matt Corral has made, only 6 were what are called big-time throws. Tight window throws, accurate and on point. 6 of 100. And the kid has an 81% adjusted completion percentage. That means that all those other throws were really wide open. 6% of all of his passes demanded accuracy and timing to be completed. That's insane. So can Alabama create contested throws and make Matt Corral play the game with his arm? That's the question. I know Lane Kiffin's not trying to let that happen. I love these two receivers he has too. Dontario Drummond and Jonathan Mingo. I love them. Dontario Drummond's leading the SEC 113 yards per game. The number 2 graded receiver in Power 5 behind, Buckeye fans, you might remember this name, Tyjon Lindsey at Oregon State, I think he's at now. A kid that committed to Ohio State, went to Nebraska, transferred, whatever. 5-star, number 1 graded receiver in Power 5. Had to throw that out there. Shout out, Tyjon. And he's 10th in the country with 4 touchdowns. Jonathan Mingo, 3rd in the SEC with almost 100 yards per game. He's averaging 20 yards per catch. Big time, big time, big time. This Alabama defense, I mean, they're not a great rush defense. They're not great defending the pass. They're not the typical Saban defense, but the one thing they still do is they tackle well, averaging 7 missed tackles per game. Flip it over on the other side of the ball, DJ Durkin. If you don't know his name, Google him, right? Former head coach at Maryland, ended up getting fired because a kid passed away, unfortunately, and, you know, just tragically. But DJ was one of the hottest names in coaching. D coordinator at Florida, D coordinator, defensive, he was a co-DC at Michigan when Michigan was actually pretty salty on defense. Took over the Maryland job. Was doing pretty well there. Then he had that tragedy, right? Reemerges for Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss defense. They're good on defense. They're not dominant, right? 13 missed tackles per game. 38 missed tackles in 3 games. So that's not ideal, obviously. They need to tackle better. And this Bama offense is fucking loaded with some talent now. Bryce Young, I've talked about it all year. Now, after I broke it down for you that he's only 15% on deep balls, 40% over throws over 10 yards. He improved a little bit, right? He's 5 of 18 on deep balls. He went 3-for-5 this past weekend with some wide open ass receivers now. 9 of 11 over 10 yards this weekend, 51% on the season. I'm really discounting this past weekend. It wasn't a real test for him. But they're not loaded at offensive skill. Everyone knows my feelings on Jameson Williams. He's their best receiver by far. John Mechie is not in the same realm as the 4 first rounders that just left, not even in the conversation. And you had to go to old Columbus, Ohio to get that STL shouty, Jameson Williams, to come in. Most targeted kid, 22 targets, 12 receptions, 54.5% reception percentage, which is low. I mean, he's their guy. I love their tight end. I think they got a decent throw game going. It's a matter of, can Bryce Young make big time throws? And are they going to ask him to? They should be getting Brian Robinson back to 100%. He sat Southern Miss last weekend. I'd imagine probably similar to why CJ Stroud did. He's a solid back, not Najee Harris. I'm not sitting here saying he's some impact player. I mean, 3.2 yards per carry versus Florida, 3.8 yards per carry against Miami. Tennessee ran for 4 against Florida, and Michigan State ran for 4.7. So their run game is not as good as Tennessee or Michigan State, if you want to go by down that rabbit hole. I don't think this Alabama offense is great. The quarterback is not Tua. It's not Mac. It's not any of those kind of names that we've heard. Not yet, at least. The run game is average at best. My only problem is Ole Miss mainly plays a 3-man front, which I hate, specifically for rush defense. They've been just okay at stopping the run, right? Louisville ran for 4 yards a carry, averaging 3.5. This will be an important aspect of this game, right? Can they limit the big hits with Jameson Williams, and can they stop this run? That's what they have to do. I do think that Kiffin causes Alabama and Saban problems. Ole Miss has yet to be seriously tested defensively. That's just the reality. I read you their schedule. Matt Corral's getting hyped up as a Heisman front runner, but he hasn't had to throw the ball at an elite level yet. He's going to have to in this game. That's not even a knock on the kid, but this is Lane Kiffin's offense, dicing defenses in the RPO play action game, and he's had wide-ass open receivers. I know this much. The over-under's at fucking 80. So you tell me what they think about Alabama and Nick Saban's defense. -14.5 for Bama, putting Vegas analytics at a final score around Bama 47-33, Ole Miss 33. That's what Vegas thinks this final score will be, right? At 80 points, at 14-point margin of victory. Last year, if you don't remember, this game was a 63-48 win by Bama. There was 111 points scored in this game. This year's Alabama defense is far worse than last year's, and Ole Miss offense has improved. I'm not ready to say Ole Miss can beat Alabama because I don't think they will at home, but I'm taking the over 80, which is wild, I know, but I'm taking that over 80, and I'm taking Ole Miss +14.5. I think they lose by a score. There you have it. The weekend of college football from me, a former college football coach. That was a lot of work that went into that. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you took something from it. I hope it gave you kind of a different lens to watch these games from this weekend. I hope it really, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you could, I should do this at the beginning. I just don't self-promote how to make this grow. Go on Apple or Spotify, rank this podcast if you think it's a 5-star. I hope you do. Leave some feedback, leave a comment. If you do, I will be reading the best ones. If we get a bunch, I'll read some of the best ones next week. So go leave us a comment, give us 5 stars, rank us to get our show popping. Really want more people to hear this because I think we're doing something good. I think we're doing something great. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. And if you didn't, please go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.